Thank you for the privilege of sharing your Women's Convention. I think I say this most every time I come in front of the women, that I'm always tremendously touched by the sense of potential that there is when you stand in front of a group of women. Because each one of you, each one of us, represents a small world. And it's a world that no one else can share, no one else can come into. I remember a long time ago, speaking on a message which spoke of Peter's wife's mother being sick of a fever. And in that fever as a mother, she was incapacitated, and the disciples brought some visitors home unexpectedly. They brought the Lord Jesus Christ, the most important man of the moment. And I remember thinking of Peter's wife's mother in that situation, a dusty house, and she too sick to do anything about it, no scones in the tins, no afternoon tea, and here are visitors. Typical. I'd better be careful. I was going to say typical of how a man can bring visitors home at a time like that. Well, they don't always do that, do they? But she was just quite useless in that situation in her world. But the Lord came and touched her. And we read that she rose and ministered. And she was, in the world that God gave her, a blessing, a minister, of great service. And God has given to each one of us a world to live in. And I can't come into your world and you can't come into mine. But God wants each one of us, in the world that he's placed us in, to be his servant, to be his minister. And all of us here in this place this morning, I'm sure, would say, I feel inadequate in my world. I feel, some of us, very dissatisfied with my world. Sometimes as young marrieds, a long time ago, we have a sense of wanting to escape. There's a restriction of children crying, nights up, we plan a picnic, and what happens? One of the children is sick, and so we're frustrated. And particularly young women who've lived a very full life, maybe in the business world, maybe in the educational world, and they suddenly find themselves restricted to a home or to a situation that they feel shut in. And very often, there's a very real dissatisfaction. And I'd venture to say that there isn't one here today that hasn't at some time in their life, if not now, felt totally dissatisfied. Are you? Dissatisfaction can be a good thing, it can be a stimulus, it can be the opposite of complacency. And complacency can be a very dangerous place to be when we're just so complacent that we are totally satisfied with our condition and with everything in it. But I don't think that this is what we're speaking about this weekend when we ask ourselves the question, are we satisfied? We're asking a question which deals with our attitude to life. And the story that we're going to share with you this weekend is a story which is based on the dissatisfaction of a family. And dissatisfaction can be a very dangerous thing. Are you satisfied? Are you satisfied with the world that God has put you in? Are you satisfied with your place in it? Are you satisfied that you're fulfilling it? We're going to share the book of Ruth this weekend, And I think a lot of you people will say, oh well, so what? I've read the book of Ruth several times, I know it backwards. I hope you do. But I hope too that this weekend you'll find things in it that you didn't know related so much to your own life. And for those of you who don't know the book of Ruth, I hope you will go home and read it for yourselves and find it the most fascinating story that could ever be written. It's a love story. And everybody, every woman, if she's honest, will admit that she loves a love story. It's a delightful love story. And it speaks of love in three ways, in three beautiful ways. It speaks of the love between women and their God. It speaks of a love which today seems, according to most literature, to be non-existent. And it isn't true, the love between a girl and her mother-in-law. And it also speaks of a delightful love between a man and a woman. Three loves, that each one were beautiful in themselves. And the character of this girl, Ruth, is one of the loveliest characters that's recorded, I would say, in history. There are only two women in the Bible who have the honour of having their names as the book, Esther and Ruth. And both of these are remarkable characters and lovely characters. Now what I'm going to do is take you through the first chapter, and I hope I can leave you on a note of to be continued in the next, so that Mrs. McLaren will come in and find you on the edge of your seat wanting to know what happens next, you know? Do you remember many years ago, I remember when I was a little girl, my brothers used to go to a local picture show and they'd come home and tell me that it always finished up with to be continued in the next, and we don't know what happened, they said. Well, this is to be continued in the next. I'm reading from the authorised version. Some of you may have modern translations. Some of it will probably be a translation according to me. I hope you'll forgive that. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. What land? In the land of Canaan, in the land of Israel, in the land of Judah. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Well, this is a black phase of the history of the people of Israel. There are some very dark blots in the reading of the people of Israel when the judges ruled. There are dark blots right through. But in this part of the history of the people of Israel, they are in a state of great confusion. They have not long been delivered from the promised land, and already, in spite of all that God had done for these people, the astonishing revelation of his power and his grace in bringing them out of Egypt, already these people have forsaken him in many, many ways and in many places, and are worshipping heathen gods and are not fulfilling the purpose that God had called them into being for, to be a witness of the true God. And we read that there was a famine in the land. It's not long since the last time I was here, we were still in the throes of a very bad drought here in the Hunter Valley. Well, God has brought us through that. There are still parts of New South Wales, still parts of Australia that are still in the grip of enormous drought. And I wonder sometimes, is God trying to tell us something, trying to teach us something? Certainly he was trying to tell his own people here, because almost always when famine came, It was God's way of trying to tell the people that they were away from him and they needed to return. And famine came to this land, and in this land there lived a family, just an ordinary family like yours and mine. There was a father, there was a mother, there were two sons, just ordinary, everyday people, with the same kind of longings for their family, with the same kind of hopes for their good, and with the same training of being taught the things of God that everybody else in that land had had, the same privileges. Now let's see what they did with their privileges, with their knowledge, and with their situation. They were in the midst of a famine. They were in the midst of a recession. There are a few of you, not many, I think, who would remember with me the days of the Depression. And they were very bad days of economic recession. And Elimelech, we read, a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn. That word sojourn means go for a little while. He went to stay for a while in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Now you can read that and say, well, what was wrong with that? There was a great deal wrong with it. Here is a man of Judah, a man of Israel, who knows that God had said that they were not to have, they were not to cohabit with the people of the heathen lands round about. And here in the face of difficulty and recession, Elimelech should have trusted God, should have believed God, should have been willing to stay with his people through the difficulties. But because he cared, and you can say with me, this is worthwhile, I care too. Because he cared for his wife, because he cared for his two sons, because of his love for them, he and Naomi talked this over. And they said, let's get out. There's no future for our sons here. There won't be any jobs when they matriculate. There'll be no opportunity. We'll have them on our hands and they won't have any way of getting material prosperity. But Moab is doing well. Moab, right over there on the other side of the sea, is doing well. I've heard from the travellers that there's great prosperity in the land of Moab. Why don't we go there? We'll only go for a little while until this is over, until the rains come, until the famine is over. And then we'll come back again. But at least we'll be able to do well for our family. And Naomi and Elimelech and their two sons did just that. The name of the man was Elimelech. Do you know what Elimelech means? It's made up of two words, Eli Melech. Eli, God, Melech, King. And his name simply means, my God is King. With a name like that, he went from the country of God to a heathen land for material prosperity. Well, you can say how very wrong of him, how very foolish it was, because as the story unfolds you will find that Elimelech and Naomi found to their sorrow that it was a wrong move. But I'm asking you, and I've had to ask myself in past days and even now, what priorities have I got for my family? When you think of your children, do you put their material prosperity and their well-being before their spiritual training? Look, I say this from my heart as my husband and I move out now, lots and lots still among young people. And we go out particularly into country areas. And there's maybe a special meeting on a Sunday for young people to try to teach them something of God and what he can mean to them and what he can do in their lives. And what do the parents say? I'm sorry, they can't come. We've got a big football match on and my sons are fullback, you know, something or other. And they can't possibly go. Or there's a swimming carnival on and my son can't let the side down. Or my daughter is one of the ace tennis players in the team and they're going to another town. You see, they're deeply concerned and you're deeply concerned for the physical well-being of your children. You need to be. And we're all deeply concerned for the schooling of our children. But are you, am I, as deeply concerned that our children be taught of God, the things of God, the standards of God? There's been an enormous slipping away of standards in this day and generation. What's your priorities? Elimelech and Naomi made a mistake. I'm so glad that one of the things that comes through in this wonderful book is that failure is not final. God's grace, the lovely grace of God, also comes through. And I've made awful mistakes in my lifetime. And God in his grace has, when I've come to him and told him how grieved I am for them, he's turned the mistake to good. He did that in this story, but I'm jumping ahead. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab. And here's a significant little phrase. What was their intention? We'll just go for a little while. And here we see they continued there. They probably found that the estate agents came pretty soon and said, we've got a delightful house down in the corner block there, just suitable for you and your family. And probably they had a look at it and said, it's much more comfortable than the house we had back in Judah. Perhaps we'll stay a little bit longer than we intended to. And it's a delightful climate here, and the people are very friendly. We'll stay longer. So they continued there. And then in the third verse, we read the first of the tragedies that come. The Bible never or very rarely elaborates. It just makes statements. And if you want to really value the Word of God, you read it and read between the lines and look at what it says. It just says Elimelech died. Nothing more. Nothing more. But can you think of Naomi? The heartache? The sorrow, away from her family, away from her people, in a strange land, and she's lost her husband. I wonder then if Naomi had said straight away, oh Lord, we made a mistake in coming here, I want to go back to my people. If things might not have been different for her, I don't know. But she didn't do that. She stayed on. Perhaps she felt that the journey, it was too big for her. She didn't have a husband to help her now. She had the two boys, and they had made friends, and there were prospects for the boys, and the boys had friends, and they were established. I'd better stay. Whatever. She stayed on. It just said she was left with her two sons. And then it goes on to say, and they took them wives of the women of Moab. Now, may I say this, that if you know your Hebrew, your Old Testament, you will know that in doing that, they disobeyed one of God's laws, because God said you must not mingle, you must not marry into the other tribes around you, because they are heathen, because they will teach you ways that will take you away from my ways, because they will introduce things that are not of me. And if you think it's not very important, can I tell you what the god of the Moabites was? A god called Chemosh. And his idolatry of Chemosh involved the sacrificing alive of your children. And that was just one small part of a terrible religion. No wonder God said, don't get involved. But here was Elimelech, Naomi, and their two sons, apparently, and I think they did, still maintaining their contact with God in the midst of this Moabite people. I'm sure that was so because of what happened later. They married women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. 10 years in a lifetime. Can you think back for 10 years in your life and all that's happened in 10 years? When I think of 10 years for me, there have been the most fantastic things happened in 10 years. I went overseas. My daughters have been married. I've become a grandmother. My husband's been diagnosed terminal illness. We've left Tali. We're living as private people. Our whole lifestyle has changed. 10 years has wrought enormous differences in my life. It's not very long, but in great things can happen in 10 years. And in 10 years, enormous things happened to Elimelech, Naomi, and the family. She lost her husband. She lost two sons. It's when I read that story, I thought straight away, because I always do this, I wonder, did they die of cancer? But I think more probably it may have been malaria, because the country there was malarial, and they didn't have the tablets, they didn't have the treatment in those days that we have now. So probably she lost her dearest, her very nearest and dearest, through coming to Moab. Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. I wonder how Naomi felt now about the decision that she made to leave her country. Now it says, she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard how God had visited his people in giving them bread. The very name of the town that she, the city that she came from, Bethlehem, means the place of bread. And she said, I'm going back. She made a decision to return. I can imagine Naomi kneeling before the Lord and telling the Lord all about it. I know that I did wrong in coming. I know that we grieved you. I know that now I've had tremendous sorrow through coming. Maybe she might have said, it could be, Lord, that if I had stayed in Israel, I might still have had my husband and boys. But I now have these two girls, these two daughters-in-law. And one of the reasons that I say to you, I believe that Naomi had kept her integrity as a God-fearing woman, is because of the relationship that we find between these two young women and their mother-in-law. I believe that she maintained the kind of life, the kind of godliness that convinced them of the reality of the God of Israel. She heard and she decided and she rose up. She went forth out of the place in verse 7 where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. How far they went, I don't know. But Naomi is thinking all the time of these two girls and what it's meaning to them to leave. And I think in Naomi there's a great love for these two girls who became so much to her. And she says to them, look, go return to your mother's house, and the Lord, not your gods, the Lord that I know, the Lord that I have told you about, the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And the Lord grant that you might find rest. Because I'll be speaking of that word a little later, I want you to remember it. Naomi here is using a word which in the Hebrew speaks of a rest that comes from being in the house of a husband. In Eastern culture, a widow or a single woman needed a kind of protection from society. They needed care, and in the house of the husband was the place where a woman of the East found this particular rest. And here Naomi is saying, go and find rest, protection, shelter in the home of a husband. And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said to her, both of them said, look, no, surely we will return with you to your people. But Naomi said, look, go back. Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. There's great sadness and great pathos in these verses. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you wait for them? Supposing I had a husband, supposing I had a baby, supposing all this happened and I bore sons, you wouldn't wait for them. And so I can't give you husbands, I can't give you the kind of rest that I want you to have. Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, it grieves me much for your sake that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Three women here had made a resolve. Naomi said, I'm going back. Ruth and Orpah said, we're going with you to a new land, to new gods, to new way of life, to new people. We're going with you. And one meant it and one didn't. I remember reading a little comment on that, and the writer said, both girls had Bethlehem in their minds, but Ruth had Moab in her heart. I'm sorry, Orpah had Moab in her heart. She was still longing for Moab. And she went back. And you know what? we never read another word of Orpa. She just disappears into obscurity. But what happens to Ruth? Naomi said to Ruth, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, gone back to her gods. Return after your sister. And then Ruth said, and in these next two verses, we have words which have gone down as some of the classic words of literature. They are beautiful beyond words. She said, entreat me not to leave you or to return from following after you, for whither you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, will I die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. A daughter-in-law to a mother-in-law. I think Naomi must have maintained such a life in that place to bring out a love and a devotion that caused Ruth to cling like that. Willing to leave her people, willing to leave her culture, willing to travel, and it was a long way that they travelled. You go back and have a look at your map and see where Moab is there. And they had to go up north, over the top, and right round to Bethlehem. Two women. I don't know how they travelled. I don't know whether they had mules. I don't know whether they had camels. I don't know whether they went on foot. But I do know that travel in those days was hazardous. So it was an enormous thing that they did. And it was also a very big thing for Naomi to beg them to go back, because she needed these young people so much for company, for help, and for sharing. Now we read here in the verse 18, when Naomi saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking to her. As we talk to you this weekend, you will see the character of this lovely girl coming out. And there's no two words, I think, that describe her more beautifully than those two words. Ruth was a steadfast person. She was steadfastly minded. There was an integrity and a steadfastness. I can't think of anything else to add to it, which characterised this girl, and her love for Naomi was of a steadfast quality that took her on this journey. So they too went until they came to Bethlehem. That's all it says. It doesn't tell you anything about the journey, of what they went through, of any difficulties, of any hardships. It just said they too went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi? Is this Naomi? I remember, as I've been reading this, one commentator said that he thought that probably Naomi had aged so much in those 10 years that they hardly recognised her. Well, maybe so. I don't think so. I think that probably they were just, they all came round and said, Naomi's back. After 10 years, we've got Naomi home again. And they knew her all right. I'm sure that the lines of suffering were there. I'm sure that the 10 years had made their mark on her. And Naomi said to them, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, which means bitterness. For the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full. She did too, you know. I think that probably when Elimelech and Naomi went out, they took all their savings with them. And I don't think they went out destitute by any means. And she went out with a financial security, with the love of her husband, with her two sons and all the prospects that were ahead of them, all the plans for the future. One day we'll come back. We'll come back here to Bethlehem and we'll build a bigger house, and our two boys will be grown then, and they'll probably go to the university, and they'll marry two lovely Hebrew girls, and we'll see our grandchildren here, and it will be wonderful. I'm sure Elimelech and Naomi talk like that. But the return was so different to what they had envisaged when they left. "I'm filled with bitterness," she said. "I went out full, and I've come back empty. My husband is dead. My two sons are dead." Now, she said one thing that wasn't right. She had forgotten for the moment the great goodness and mercy and grace of God. She didn't come back empty. She came back with a girl whose love and companionship and steadfastness was to cause to be written by the women who said, "Is this Naomi?" I'm sorry, which caused the women who said, "Is this Naomi?" later on to say, "Ruth is better to you than many, many sons." She didn't come back empty. She came back rich, though she didn't realize it, with the love of a wonderful daughter-in-law. And you know, sometimes when God deals with us and we feel that everything is against us and God has failed us and we've lost the things that we valued, we fail to see sometimes the grace and the love and the goodness of God in that situation. I know you'll forgive me for speaking personally here. I said it, I think, before, and we were talking about this at the breakfast time, that I felt that God had dealt so hardly with me, with us, when I knew Godfrey had terminal cancer, and that he would be dead in 3 months. I knew a little bit of what Naomi felt, the awful sense of loss. But you know, the richness and the goodness of God that has come out of that experience to us, admittedly, I still have him. But he has enriched our lives in that experience. The very trees around us, the very loveliness of nature is lovelier because of that experience. There isn't a day when we drive together that we don't say, "Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that beautiful? Isn't it lovely to be sharing it?" And every morning that we wake, we're together. And life has taken on a new dimension of richness. So when difficulties come, and when hardships come, and when things touch your life that you find you feel God has left you and you are bereft, look for the goodness of God behind it, because it's there. Because it's there. Naomi said, "I've come back empty." She hadn't. She'd come back with great riches. So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, is her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. When you read the Bible, do you just skip through it? And do you sometimes look at it and say, "Well, I wonder, do you even stop to think? I wonder why that was bothered to be put there." You know, none of the rest of the story would have been written if that verse hadn't been there. They came in a time of barley harvest. And I don't know if you stop to realise that when you love God, if you've given your life to him, your times are in his hands. your very times are in God's hands. And God lovingly, gently and graciously timed the arrival of these two women for the beginning of barley harvest. And that time led to the rest of the story being written, to be continued in our next. Well, but before I leave it, let me say one or two things. If you can read that story and say it has no relation whatsoever to me, it was written hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It was written in a different time era, to a different culture, to a different people altogether. It has no relation to me at all. Yes, it does. This is a wonderful part of the Bible because it speaks of ordinary people with ordinary needs, and even though hundreds of years might separate us, and even though countries may separate us, the basic needs still remain the same. We need love. We need sustenance. We need the same things. People all around the world need the same things. And Naomi and Ruth had the same needs as you and I. Just ask yourself this morning, will you, if you forget everything else I've said, have I got my priorities right? Could I be making the same mistake that Naomi and Elimelech made? For my children? For myself? If you have a choice, if you're a young person, of deciding which way you'll go in life, and one of those choices leads you away from God and one leads you towards Him, the one away from God might look as if it has all the material prospects in the world, but don't take it, because it's a false hope. And it will lead to ultimate sorrow and ultimate tragedy. Not necessarily like theirs, but maybe a greater tragedy of eternal things. Look at your priorities for your family. Look at your priorities for your husband. Look at your priorities for yourself and your children. And put God first. And seek to make right decisions. You might say in your life, I can make decisions. It won't matter very much what decision I make. It's not terribly important. Sometimes we don't realise how vitally important decisions are. I'm thinking of the fact that when I was just a little girl of 12, without understanding really, without real understanding, I just said, yes, I would like to ask Jesus Christ into my life. And it was, if you like, a decision, for want of a better word. And I really didn't understand the enormity of that. I didn't understand what I was doing. And there didn't seem to be any difference in my life at all. But what God did do was to set me on a different course. And I wonder today where I'd have been and what I'd have been and what kind of person I would not have been had I not made that decision. And I'm wondering if here today there are women who have never yet realised that there is a necessity for deciding to come to God. Do you believe in Him? Do you really? If you believe in God, what is your estimate of Him? Could God be a liar? Could God break promises? If there is a God, and only, the psalmist is right when he said, only a fool could say, there is no God. When you look at the perfection of creation, when you look at the perfection of your own body, we don't think it's very perfect, do we? But when you look at the marvellous mechanism of your body, and to say that that just happened requires more credulity than the fact of God. Of course there is intelligence behind it. Of course there is a God. And if God, he must be moral. If God, he must be true. And God has said certain things to you and me. Do you believe him? Have you come to him? Have you believed that Jesus Christ is God's Son, who died to take the punishment of sin, to give us newness of life? Let's have a look at Naomi, just briefly, and with this I'll finish. There was just a kind of blueprint that she gave us for her return and for us. Some of us may not have been living as close to God as we should have been. And we're aware of this and we'd love to return. There may be some of us who have never yet known him in the personal way that we're speaking about this morning. Could you say deep in your heart, I'm absolutely satisfied that I'm a child of God, that I belong to him, and that when the only thing of which I'm absolutely certain is going to happen to me, death, comes, it will be a step into his presence. Can you say with deep, satisfying certainty, I know that this is sad? Can you? Well, here's a blueprint that Naomi took, which we may take too. She heard that there was bread in her country. She believed, I don't know how she heard, but she believed what she heard. And she acted on that belief. She got up and went. You're hearing, and you will hear. You have heard. Do you believe? And will you act? Or have you acted? If you would like to return in a new way to the God who comes through in this book as a loving, overruling, compassionate, forgiving, loving Heavenly Father. If you would like to know him, you've heard, you can believe, but you need to act on that belief. Will you? I hope that this weekend, the story of Ruth and the story of Naomi, but particularly Ruth, will lead you into a new understanding of the love of God, because he is a wonderful Heavenly Father.